good to see so many gathered in, and you're all very welcome. Some have travelled quite a bit, and a wee touch of fog doesn't make travelling any easier, so we're glad to see you all, and trust you remember the two nights tomorrow and Thursday again, and if you're free, you'll certainly be very welcome at the meetings. Now, our reading tonight will be from the book of Judges, and chapter 6, first of all, and then I'll read a little from chapter 8. The book of Judges, and chapter 6. Verse 1, and the children of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord, and the Lord delivered them into the hand of Midian 7 years. And the hand of Midian prevailed against Israel, and because of the Midianites, the children of Israel made them the dens which are in the mountains, and caves and strongholds. And so it was when Israel had sown, that the Midianites came up, and the Amalekites and the children of the east, even they came up against them. And they encamped against them and destroyed the increase of the earth, till they come unto Gaza, and left no sustenance for Israel, neither sheep, nor ox, nor ass. For they came up with their cattle and their tents, and they came as grasshoppers for multitude, for both they and their camels were without number, and they entered into the land to destroy it. And Israel was greatly impoverished because of the Midianites, and the children of Israel cried unto the Lord. And then verse 7 down to verse 10, the Lord sends a prophet, and he reminds them of what the Lord done for them. But the end of verse 10, ye have not obeyed my voice. Verse 11, and there came an angel of the Lord, and sat under an oak, which was an Ophrah, that pertained unto Joash the Abi Ezrite, and his son Gideon threshed wheat by the winepress to hide it. And the Lord appeared unto him, and said unto him, the Lord is with thee, thou mighty man of valour. And Gideon said unto him, O my Lord, if the Lord hath this befallen us, and where be all his miracles which our fathers told us of, saying, did not the Lord bring us up from Egypt? But now the Lord hath forsaken us and delivered us into the hand of the Midianites. And the Lord looked upon him and said, go in this thy might, and thou shalt save Israel from the hand of the Midianites. Have not I sent thee? And he said unto him, O my Lord, wherewith shall I save Israel? Behold, my family is poor in Manasseh. I am the least in my father's house. And the Lord said unto him, surely I will be with thee, and thou shalt smite the Midianites as one man. And he said unto him, if now I have found grace in thy sight, then show me a sign that thou talkest with me. Depart not hence, I pray thee, until I come unto thee and bring forth my present and set it before thee. And he said, I will tarry until thou come again. And Gideon went in and made ready a kid, and unleavened cakes of an ephah of flour. The flesh he put in a basket, and he put the broth in a pot, and brought it out unto him under the oak, and presented it. And the angel of God said unto him, take the flesh and the unleavened cakes, and lay them upon this rock, and pour out the broth. And he did so. Then the angel of the Lord put forth the end of the staff that was in his hand, and touched the flesh and the unleavened cakes, and there rose up fire out of the rock, and consumed the flesh and the unleavened cakes. Then the angel of the Lord departed out of his sight. And when Gideon perceived that he was an angel of the Lord, Gideon said, alas, O Lord God, for because I have seen an angel of the Lord face to face. And the Lord said unto him, peace be unto thee, fear not, thou shalt not die. Then Gideon built an altar there unto the Lord, and called it Jehovah Shalom. Unto this day it is yet an Ophrah of the Abi Ezrites. And then he had a killer's altar. And so now we go on, because we not get that far. Chapter 8, just for a verse or two. Chapter 8. This is Gideon speaking to the men of Succoth, who wouldn't help him. Verse 7, Gideon said, therefore, when the Lord hath delivered Zeba and Zalmunna into mine hand, then I will thresh your flesh with the thorns of the wilderness and with briars. And verse 13, and Gideon the son of Joash returned from battle before the sun was up, and caught a young man, of the men of Succoth and inquired of him. And he, that is the young man described, or Mr. Darby, the revisers have, he wrote down unto him the princes of Succoth and the elders thereof, wrote down the list of their names, 70 men. Then Gideon comes, verse 16, he took the elders of the city and thorns of the wilderness and briars, and with them he taught the men of Succoth, beat down the tower of Penuel, and slew. Now that's a broken reading, but it will have to do for just the purposes of tonight's meeting. We trust the Lord's blessing upon his word to us tonight. Just for the sake of those perhaps who were not able to be here last night, I will set in context what we are trying to do in these few simple studies of this present week. The title that we have placed upon the meetings is The Agriculture of the Soul. We are working on the premise that just as Adam was made from the dust of the ground, was made from the soil. The Hebrew word for ground is Adamah. And of course, you can see that it's closely linked with the name Adam. Adam was a man of the soil, and he was a man taken from the soil. There are, therefore, many analogies between the soil and the human personality, and between the way the soil operates, and between what the and between the way the human personality can produce various features and temperaments and so on. So that just as the soil needs to be cultivated, needs to be weeded, needs to be watered, needs to be tended and tilled, so if we are going to get the best from our own personality, there will also have to be some spiritual cultivation. There will also have to be some spiritual tillage take place. And pursuing that kind of thing, I have selected for the purposes of the meetings some of those agricultural activities in the Old Testament that are spiritually illustrative of some of the exercises that can be undertaken for the development of the Christian's life. We have thought last night about gleaning with Ruth and the significance of gleaning and Bible study and all that's contributed to spiritual life by gleaning in the Scriptures. Tonight we think about threshing with Gideon. Tomorrow night, gardening with Solomon. And on Thursday night, planting with Paul. And from each one of these different branches of agriculture, or if you like, different branches of horticulture, we will seek to learn some spiritual lessons. Now, this book of Judges, we can't go into it because we're just taking a little section out of it here for one or two simple thoughts, practical thoughts. I can't take time to go into the whole book. You know, it's a very discouraging book. Children of Israel do evil in the sight of the Lord, and they just seem to go down an escalator of descending depths of evil. And one generation goes lower than the generation before it, and you just wonder how bad it can get. But it's a very, very discouraging book. At the same time, it's a most encouraging book. Because one of the things that stands out very, very significantly in the book of Judges is when things were bad, God was able to take up most unlikely characters. And boys that we would nearly think were misfits. And he was able to use them. And able to use not only certain individuals, but he was able to use certain instruments for the deliverance of his people in dark times and in very, very difficult days. You know all the stories about the boy with the left hand and all the lessons from that. And about the boy with the axe goat and the other man with the jawbone of an ass and the man whose mother was a harlot. All of those awkward characters and all of those misshapes, they were used by God. That's an encouragement to many of us in the meeting, because it lets me see if God takes up a man or takes up a woman, there's no knowing what God can do. even though that person in himself or in herself might be crippled or limited or biased or twisted or crooked in some way. And the fact that God can use crooked people, it opens the door for most of the folks that are present tonight at this meeting. So that it's a very discouraging book, and at the same time, it's a very encouraging book. This man Gideon, he was an upward enough man in many different ways. He was a man who seemed to have nearly an inferiority complex. And people like that, you know, are hard to work with. You get another man, and he has a superiority complex. Even though he has failed his GCSEs, and even though he has failed his first year at university and his second year, he wants to do a reset because he's intending to become Prime Minister in 2025. And he thinks that he'll be able to challenge and do anything, a superiority complex, hard to work with. But a person who's always retiring and shying away and shrinking from responsibility and crawling into a corner, that kind of a person can be a little difficult as well. And that's rather more the template into which Gideon seems to fit. Now, I'll be coming to this part about him threshing wheat by the winepress just in a couple of minutes. But we need to think about Gideon's background. Not so much his own personal background, but think about the background of the days in which he lived. I'll not spend long on it, but I do need to spend just to set the scene. In the early verses of chapter 6, we are told that in these days the Midianites were coming into the land. As a result of these Midianite invasions, the Israelites were going into hiding. They were abandoning their posts. They were digging out dens and caves, and they were being chased like rabbits into their burrow, and they were digging themselves into the earth rather than standing on the soil and say that this is God's land and you Midianites have no title here. We are here to defend this land. They were abandoning it and hiding in the ground, in the dens and caves of the mountains, and so on. You see, that's one of our difficulties as well. Invasions can come into our lives as Christians. Invasions can come into the assembly at times. And maybe, and I'm not making too much of this, maybe, you know, we have lost power because we've got buried in the earth. We're digging in, and we're digging down, and we're getting ourselves buried in the clay of material things. And because we are so buried, we are not able to maintain the inheritance for God as otherwise perhaps we should do. They were hiding instead of defending the patch of ground. A very, very sad situation. Then they were hungry. Because, now, it's important just to be clear as to what exactly was going on here. They weren't hungry because there was a famine. They weren't short of food because nothing was growing. The crops were growing well. There was no famine. But what was happening? The Israelites tilled the soil, the Israelites planted the seed, the Israelites did the hard work. And when the fields were just ripe with grain at the start of the harvest, just before they ripened off, the Midianites came in and they took off all the food. Just left the land completely stripped, so that while the land was producing, and the Israelites were working hard in one sense, they weren't enjoying it because of these Midianite invasions, and they were left in conditions of hunger. We're told here in one of these verses, actually, it says in verse number 4 that when the Midianites came in, they destroyed the increase of the earth, till thou come unto Gaza, and left no sustenance, neither sheep, nor ox, nor ass. A very, very sad situation. I don't elaborate. Weren't too many sacrifices on the altar, I can tell you. No sheep. No service. The ox, the ass. No sustenance. Times were hard. It was very bare. When these Midianites came tromping over the whole ground, it wasn't just that they carried off the grain, but there were so many of them came ploughing into the fields that they tromped it down into the ground. And the valley of Jezreel, where Gideon lived, that general area, the valley of Jezreel, that beautiful fertile valley, up two-thirds of the way up the country, one of the best parts of the land, it was just destroyed because these Midianites, they tromped everything just into the gutter. You have heard the brethren speak so often, and again, I'm not going to develop it, but I just want to mention it, for I have other things in mind. And it's true enough that the word Midian, in the book of Proverbs, it's quite often translated strife or contention. Strife or contention. The Hebrew word din means fighting and contention and all that kind of thing. Tell me this, people. Tell me this. If you get an invasion of strife into an assembly, how does it leave it? No sustenance. No ox. No sheep. No ass. There's not the burden bearing. There's not the yoking together. There's not the sacrifice and the worship. All because Midian has come in. I myself in my little day have seen many assembly completely denuded of both numbers and spirituality, just because useless strife got in. And it finishes up in verse number 6. As I finish with this section, the sad story was this: Israel was greatly impoverished because of the Midianites. That word impoverished is a word that means they were brought low. It brought them right down to the very bottom. And they were hiding. And they were hungry. And they were humiliated. And the Midianites had the upper hand. And wherever you went in that beautiful valley, instead of seeing an Israelite with a lovely field of grain, you could see nothing but Midianites by the dozen. Sad story. Sad story. I remember Mr. McShane telling me and telling others as well about a place that he went to with Mr. McCracken as a young man. It's not a place that anyone here has ever visited. There's not an assembly there now, and so on. But there was an old gentleman in it, and Mr. McShane, as a young man, was out. The assembly had closed down just some time before it. Mr. McShane was out walking with this old man, and he said to him, he said, "Sir," he said, "I have heard stories about this place." He says, what happened that the assembly closed down?" The old fellow paused for a minute or two. He says, "Son, I'll tell you." He says, "We just fought it to death." You can do that. That's no bother. No bother. We have some fellas group here, where boys, it's a bit of scrapping. Just fight it to death. And then, I don't know who'd take a funeral for you, but somebody do it. Somebody do it, and they'll likely sell the place. Or this hall that I'm talking about, that Mr. McShane was talking about, the dust was on the seats, and the cobwebs were in the windows, and the light was out, and it all was dark and cold. And a while before it, they had 40 breaking bread. And the man himself said, he says, "We just fought it to death." And I think he was about the biggest fighter in the place, from what I'm told, but nonetheless, you see what happens. Once Midian gets in, all these things, they just seem to take over. And when you get to the end of verse 6 of Judges chapter 7, it's a painful. And the children of Israel cried unto the Lord. And the Lord sent a prophet. Now I'll have to leave that out, because that's a very important little section. He didn't send a judge. He didn't raise up a deliverer. He first of all sent a prophet. And the prophet told them where they had gone wrong. He diagnosed the problem. He searched their conscience. And then when we get down to verse number 11, there's the appearance of Gideon on the scene. So that's roughly the background against which Gideon was working. A tough time. Tough time. And yet to me, it's most encouraging, and I want to encourage, as I said last night, I'm greatly interested in encouraging all believers, but especially young believers. Now listen, against a background as dark as that, you young believers, a man, Gideon, he shone for God, and he did a mighty work for God. You see, any of us can be great Christians when things are going well. Anybody can be a good sailor when the sea is calm. Anybody can be a great soldier in the barracks. But what tests a real sailor is when the sea is choppy. And what tests a real soldier is when the artillery is roaring and the thick and the heat of the battle is on. And what tests us as Christians is not how we perform in ideal conditions. Anybody could go and be a good Christian in an assembly where everything is prosperous, but the Bible's absolutely full of people who left their mark for God when things were very bad and things were very, very negative. Now, I want to come now, having said something about Gideon's background, I'll say a little bit about his busyness. You see, when the Lord first spoke to him, and I'm advancing a little bit in the story just for a second, it tells us the angel of the Lord came, sat under the oak at Ophrah, and Gideon threshed wheat by the winepress to hide it from the Midianites. Now, I want to think about what he was doing. And I want you to think about where he was doing it. And I want you to think about why he was doing it. As to what he was doing, he was threshing wheat. As to where he was doing it, it says in your Bible he threshed wheat by the winepress. Now that's strictly speaking not correct. That should be translated, he was threshing wheat in the winepress. And the Bible tells us more. Because here's a man doing a difficult thing at a difficult time, and he's doing it in a difficult place. He's threshing wheat in the winepress, and the why is this. He was doing it to hide this precious wheat from the Midianites. He said, they've got enough. He said, we're not going to feed strife anymore. He says, these boys that represent strife and have wrecked our whole countryside here, and they've stripped it of everything that was for the good of man and for the glory of God, he said, they have come enough times and they've got a belly full. They've got a belly full every time they came. He said, we'll have to draw a line. No more. No more for the Midianites. He says, we're going to feed Gideon. And we're going to feed God's people. I'll tell you, brethren, it would be a great business if we stopped feeding strife. Stop. Don't feed strife. Because if you feed strife, I can tell you, he'll become a monster. He'll become a monster. He'll start out as a kitten that'll scrab you. And if you keep feeding him, he'll finish up as a tiger that will maul you. Don't be feeding Midian. Gideon says, now, enough is enough. He said, we are going to have to feed my family, myself, my family, and God's people. And he said, we are going to hide this wheat from the Midianites, and he was threshing wheat. You know, it's a good thing to get to the wheat jar. He wasn't so much concerned in bulk. He wasn't so much concerned in half. He wanted to get to the real wheat. He wanted, actually, this is the significance, just as I mention this quickly, but I need to mention it emphatically. That's the significance of threshing wheat. He's going to separate things. He's going to separate the chaff and what is light from what is real grain and what has a bit of weight to it. Can I say to all the Christians, can I say especially to young believers here, you watch in your life, do your best in life to remove from your life everything that's just lightweight and everything that is just worldly and everything that's just characterized by vanity and is just as empty and as hollow as chaff and straw and stubble, and you cultivate in your life what is real, genuine, whole grain. And that's what Gideon was doing. Actually, on a wider scale, that was the problem. That was the root problem with the Israelites. They didn't like this business of separating. They were mixing. They were mixing in marriage. And some of the Israelites were marrying, the Israelitish boys were getting married to the daughters of these idolatrous people, and vice versa. And they were all getting mixed up. And the more they got mixed up, the more they were losing their power. Gideon says, this whole idea of wheat and chaff and wheat and tares being mixed, it will never do. He said, we'll have to get things sorted out. And we'll have to get things separated. So he was threshing wheat. You see, that's a great matter in a Christian's life. A little bit of self-judgment. May God grant that we might, you know what I mean when I say about say this, that we might bring the flail of rigorous examination down upon our food supply and what we are feeding upon. Here I challenge you younger folks here again tonight. It's great to see you. And I would want to help you as much as I can, because being a young Christian is a handful. It's not easy. And working as a nurse in the hospital with all the temptations, being a student in a university campus, being a young believer in the workplace, it's not easy. And if you're going to be able to maintain your spiritual stamina, it's absolutely vital. Now, it's absolutely vital that you watch your food supply. And it goes in. You know the old giggle principle that the boys talk about in the computer world. Garbage in, garbage out. And what you put is what will come out. And what you feed upon. Now you have to watch in what you put into your mind. And what you allow to influence your whole thinking. Watch that there's no chaff in it. What about your CD? The power of music. The power of music, and I'm very fond of music. I'm not going to criticize all music. You say, should we only listen to sacred music? Have a bit of sense. Not at all. I'm not going to be against classical music or some of that good music. Not at all. But there are some of these fellas, and they have CDs, and all I would need to see is the look of the boy in the front of it. He just looks like a rougher. And I would know that he's not a boy whose music should be in my shop. Because if the music that he plays hasn't changed himself, it's not likely to have a good effect on me. What about your books? What about your video? You see, we need to thresh, and we need to bring things under close examination, and what is hollow and light and worldly. You know, I'm really back just now into Psalm number 1. The righteous man of Psalm number 1. He's like a tree planted by the rivers of water, strong and stable and steadfast and solid. The ungodly are not so. They are like the chaff which the wind driveth away. The wind won't lift the tree that is well rooted and well planted and dry, but the wind can blow away the chaff. May God grant that we'll examine things for their weight and for their wholesomeness. See, that's what he's looking for. Grain that is heavy and grain that is wholesome. And Gideon, that's what he is doing. He's threshing wheat. Is it any wonder this is the man that's going to be the leader of God's people? He's going to bring God's people back to freedom, and he's going to bring them back into a full food supply. He himself is exercised about it in a small way in his own little court. Now, where was he doing it? He was doing it in the wine press. That's a very strange procedure altogether. Was that ever done before? Did you ever hear tell of anybody? I doubt if it was ever done before this, and I doubt if it was ever done since. Threshing wheat in a wine press. You said, sure, a wine press is a place where you thread grapes. Aye. No grapes. There's no grapes these days. When the old Midianites get in, there's no joy. If strife gets in, there'll be no joy. There'll be no grapes. The wine press is empty as far as grapes are concerned. And anyway, the vintage time hasn't come. But he's in the wine press. Now, a wine press was a dished out, two pieces of dished out rock. And a small conduit. And the man tromped the grapes in the top one. And as he tromped the grapes in the top one, the juice trickled down through the conduit and was collected in the lower dished out piece of rock. That's simply what a wine press was. When they were threshing wheat in Bible times, you remember, for example, what the Lord Jesus, or what John the Baptist said about the man with his shovel, whose fan is in his hand, and he will truly purge his floor, whose shovel is in his hand. What happened? They picked out a place that was fairly level and yet elevated. Quite a large section of land, maybe as big as this room. On an elevated place, well exposed. They spread out the sheaves of grain across this room. It was called the threshing floor. They tramped over that grain with animals, asses or with oxen or whatever it was. And behind those animals, they pulled what in our day we would call pallets, heavy pallets. They called them sledges. And as the oxen went round trailing these sledges and tramped over the grain was crushed and the real grain was separated from the husks and so on. Then, after that was done, the farmer came with a shovel. And into that floor where this broken grain was lying everywhere, he took it and he tossed it up into the air on a windy day. As he tossed it up into the air, the wind whistled through and carried the chaff over here. The heavy grain just fell black down to the floor. He kept tossing and tossing and tossing until all the chaff was over there and all the grain was here. And when he started, before he started to toss, there was one big pile. When he finished tossing and the wind finished blowing, there were two piles, a pile of grain and a pile of chaff. Now that's how threshing was normally done, in a public place, in a place where the wind could get at it so that the farmer's job would be made a little bit more easy. But no, This man knew that circumstances dictate otherwise. He said, if I do what's usually done, if I take my grain up to the open place, well, he said, I'll not be there. I'll not be hardly right started to work until the Midianites will see it, and they will come along with their arms and their armies. And he said, the whole thing will be lost. He said, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll use what I can. He says, I'll not worry. I'll not worry about what I can't do because of circumstances. But he said, I'll improvise.
and with what I have at my disposal, he said, I'll make the best of it. And so, he got his grain down into this wine press. Over this wine press was a tree. Not the usual place at all. Not the usual way. But here's a man, and he says, I'll do my best with what is available to me, even in times when what is desirable can't be obtained. Now, just let me apply that for a second. You know, I'm going back to linking back with something that I said just a few minutes ago. Dear Christians, sometimes when it's a matter of serving the Lord, desirable and ideal conditions are not available. Now, we have two options when that happens. You can say, oh, what should they get into a situation? Oh, you can't thresh wheat here. No point that you need to come here. She had no chance. You haven't a chance. You think wheat up there, they'll up in 5 minutes. They'll be on you like the gypsies. You can't. Is there another thing you can do? Just too bad. I'd love to do it, but you can't do it. Just signs of the times. Tough times we live in, you just can't do it. And he didn't take that up. He says, you can't do it, but he says, I'm going to do something. He says, I'm not going to let the whole bone go with the dog of the Midianites. He says, we can't let the whole thing go. He said, they've had 7 years of it, and he said, it's time that the tide was changed. We're at the lowest ebb. And he says, the tide would need to change, and I can't go up to the top of the field and thresh in the conventional way. Well, he says, I'm going to use what I have, and I'm going to do what I can. And imagine a man getting away down into a wine press to thresh wheat. You see, you need your head examined. You see, you'll make no way. Well, he did it. He threshed wheat in the wine press. Maybe you're in difficult circumstances. I know a brother, and he was brought up in a home. He's now a very useful man in an assembly a good distance from here. Some of the brethren here know him, and they know his value, and I'm not exaggerating. He was brought up in a home, saved in his teens. Nobody in the house was saved. They hated the very mention of the gospel or Christ or the Bible or anything to do with it. They wouldn't even turn off the TV to let him read, pray, or anything. He shared a room with two other brothers. Absolutely impossible. Many a night, years ago, I went to see him. And he was stuck away up in the corner attic of an outshed. Pouring over his Bible. Now, I didn't have to do that. No problem in the house that I was brought up in. I had a little room set aside just for my own use, at least part of the time. I had no problem. Shame on me if I didn't make some little bit of headway. But he didn't have that facility. He didn't say, well, it's too bad. I can't study. I haven't got a house place like Gilliland has, and I haven't got a place like some of the other brethren where everybody's favorable. It's just too bad. I would love to study, but I can't study. He used what he could use. Now listen, if you're willing to do it, you mightn't have the books. You mightn't have the brains. You say, but I would love to study the Bible and really get some good pure wheat and get something that would be good for God. But I don't know Greek. And I don't know Hebrew. How many do know Hebrew and Greek? Many of you really meant that know Hebrew and Greek. I'm not asking the many you've met to talk about it. I have met a few that know it, and maybe few. Haven't met any of them lately. But maybe few that really know it. Listen, you don't need to Hebrew and Greek to get benefit from the Bible. Get a couple of good translations. I've been a fix for that now. Well, that's your own business. You sort yourself out. I'm all right. Get a couple of good translations. We appreciate the King James Version. The King James Version is not a 100% perfect translation. It's a wonderful translation. I have no thought in my mind, in my wildest imagination, of taking this book and using some other translation in public meetings. But in private Bible study, I compare it, to compare it with the original as well, but that's beside the point. I compare it with other translations just to see. And you use what you can. You see, that's the point I make it. He threshed out wheat in a and of course, a wine press always speaks to us in the Bible about joy. The pressing of wine is the flowing of grape juice. It wasn't the flowing of grapes on this occasion. It was the flowing of grain. And if you put yourself to the Bible in your own little way, in your own little corner, in your own little room, in your bedroom, get down to business, in your own awkward circumstances, maybe there's a great deal of pressure on you, pressure of other studies. You have to attend to those studies. I'm not against. Don't neglect your Bible. When things are crushing in upon you, that's the wine press. Make sure you don't neglect the cultivation of your soul. That you don't neglect the threshing of wheat. And if you spend time to thresh a little wheat from the Bible, there are many of these, dear brethren, can vouch for what I would have said. You will get a joy. You will get a joy that nothing else in this world is able to give. Now, what he did and why he did it, I've already covered that. I don't think I'll go back to emphasize it anymore. He said there's no more for the Midianites. We have been feeding the fighters enough. He says, we have given enough harvest to the foe. He says, we are going to keep God's food for God's people. And we are going to make it into a form that they can digest it. And they can eat it. And they can enjoy it. Now I think I'll say, well, maybe I should just emphasize that a little bit more. You see, people that have done great things for God, you take Martin Luther. Martin Luther had very difficult circumstances in life. The Reformation didn't burst upon this world as something just all of a sudden. It had very, very small beginning. Worked with difficult... You take all those biographies of missionary men and men who like Gideon... stepped out to turn the tide for God. They always started out very, very small, and they used what they had and where they had it. Not waiting for conditions, but capitalizing and improvising and making the best of their own situation. You take the man, for example, that we read about later on in the Bible. It says that he slew two lion-like men of Moab, and he slew a lion in a pit on a snowy day. Oh, I love that. God tells us that that fellow Benny Hai slew a lion one day. No. God says, I want to tell you. He says he slew a lion in a pit. Once you get it, a pit of a lion, it's you or him for it. Just. And he says he not only slew a lion in a pit, but he says he slew a lion in a pit on a snowy day. In fact, I've often wondered, and this is only part of my imaginations. I was talking about reading between the lines last night and reading on the lines. This is a little bit between the lines. I've often wondered if a snowy day helped him to do the job. Because likely the old beast was running about the country terrorizing everybody, and when it snowed, I've often wondered, was Benny Hai able to follow it to the pit? Because he saw its footprints, its paw marks. And the difficulty of the weather, and the difficulty of the day, gave him the very clue that he needed to do his best work for God. You see, we say that difficult days, they give us an excuse, they let us off the hook for doing nothing. In the Bible, men use difficult circumstances and difficult times as the catalyst for doing something that was
significant. That other man, that other man in that very same chapter, 2 Samuel chapter 23, that kept the patch of lintels. It says he stood there when the men of Israel were gone away.
We are told when he did it. Remember those men that went down and broke through the ranks, and they got David the drink of water.
The Bible tells us that they did it in harvest time, when it was very hot. So that one man did his big work when things were very cold. The other man did his big work when temperatures were high. And the Bible takes a note.
Here's a man, when the Midianites were rampaging through the country, here's a man said, no more for the Midianites.
He said, I'll get into the wine press where nobody will see me. And he says, privately and secretly, he said, I'll be threshing wheat. I would say, likely without much fear of contradiction, for it's the start of harvest time, a warm time of the year. He wasn't too long at the flailing until the beads of sweat were on his brow. But it paid off. Now, I want to move on here.
But
what Gideon didn't notice was, he was working away so industriously, there was a man sitting watching him, and he never even noticed him. He's flailing away. And this man said, who is this man? It's the Lord.
Hey? You see the Lord? The Lord comes down, he says, the Lord sat under the oak.
He says, I'm going to watch this boy for a while. Imagine the Lord coming to watch. I think the Lord was just, it was a real treat to the Lord to watch a man threshing out wheat when nobody else would bother their head. Everybody was hiding in the dens and caves. Everybody had given up. Everybody had thrown in the towel. Here's a man is going to move in a different direction. And the Lord actually comes, and for a while, because it says in verse 11, there came an angel of the Lord and sat under the oak. His son Gideon, Joash's son Gideon, threshed wheat in the winepress to hide it from the Midianites. And the angel of the Lord appeared unto him. The Lord is with thee, thou mighty man of valor. The Lord sat for a while before he spoke. So that while Gideon is, can I say, to encourage some of you, see, there may be a young brother in this meeting tonight, and you have really taken the assembly and the things of God seriously. The Believer's Magazine haven't noticed it yet. You haven't managed to scrape through to Words in Season yet. There's nobody making a fuss of you, and you're not worried about that. And you're not making a fuss about yourself. You see, we're living in a great day of communication. And they say, if you're gifted and if you have something to give, you really need to keep your contacts, you know. Make sure the boys have got your telephone number and your email address. And make sure you're on the air. Because if your services are needed, they need to know in an international sphere that you're available. And it would be too bad if you were so capable and you had such a basket of food to give to God's people. It would be too bad if nobody noticed you. Don't you worry about your email address or any other address. As long as the Lord sees you, the Lord watched them. Before very long, there's not a man in Israel that won't know the name of Gideon. And even the Midianites will know it. And it'll put a shiver down their spine. But now, he's an unknown. And the Lord just sits and watches. Is there a young man tonight here in Omagh sitting listening to me? And you're thrashing out wheat when none of the other Christians know. Maybe when they're sleeping in their bed, you're working at the book. Beneath the glare of a table lamp. Nobody knows. Nobody needs to know. Can I say you keep at it because the Lord sees you. And then after a while the Lord appeared unto him. And the significance of that is this, that for the first while the Lord was there. But then he made himself visible. You know, there are times, I'll say this, now you'll not get any visions. At least I don't think so. if you would get too many visions, you should maybe slip in to see the doctor, man.
Well, you'll not be getting any visions in that sense. But I would take it that a man who's going to serve the Lord's people and win victories for God, he not only knew what it is for fresh wheat, but the Lord will manifest himself to him in a special way. And he called him a mighty man of valor. Now I see the time has gone away here. I can't go on to that. You say, well, there's not much signs of valor there. He's a card, the boy. He's a card. He's hiding in the, doing the thing in the wine press. Hasn't even the gall or the guts, as they say in this country, to go up and do it out in the open. No. If Gideon was doing what he did, where he did it, it wasn't because he lacked the courage, but he had the wisdom to know, if I don't do it here, the Midianites will get it up there. As he did what nobody else would dare to do, the Lord described him as a mighty man of valor. You know, in the Bible sense, I think it's very interesting to see what qualifies in the Bible as strength. What is strength? What is power? Is that sending satellites into space? No. Those kind of things in the Bible are not brought under the category of power in the sense of moral power. You take a boy at school. In higher education nowadays, with all the temptation, take a girl. And for years she goes every day to that school. She maintains standards of modesty and purity, even though there might be temptations cross her path two or three times every day, and she does it for years, and that's strength. That's strength. Take a man in business, where he finds temptations that he can make a few easy pounds any day of the week if he bends the rule. He sees other people making money easily by cheating. It's not easy to watch that. It gets to his spirit. And he would be tempted sometime just for a little bit of convenience to take a shortcut. But he resisted for years. That's strength. That's strength. That's why God described this man. He said, this is strength in the estimation of heaven. A man that will go down into a secret place and will do what nobody else thinks of doing. He said, you're a mighty man of valor. He said, go, and I'm with you. I better go here, and I'll just stop in a minute or two. Gideon's background, Gideon's dizziness. I want to just very quickly, two points that I want to raise and then we'll stop. I want to say a little word about Gideon's basket. Because he said to the Lord, there's an interesting dialogue here that I haven't time to go into. I'd like to have talked about his why. Gideon says, why is this befallen us? I would like to have asked about, he said something about his wherewithal, or wherewith shall I go? And some of those questions that Gideon raised, I'll omit the dialogue. But he said to the Lord, he said, Lord, will you wait there till I want to give you a present for you? Well, the Lord says, have you got a present for me? He said, nobody about you gives me any present. Huh? And the Lord says, nobody about here gives me. I haven't got a present here from anybody for years. You haven't, though? Not at all. Not at all. He says, anything these boys produced, he says, the Midianites got it. He says, they let the whole thing go to the Midianites. He says, they never give me a present. There's no ox, there's no ass, there's no sheep, there's no presents for me. He says, if you want to go and get me a present, he says, I'll be so glad to get it. He says, I'll wait for it. I don't know how long the Lord waited. I tell you this, Gideon must have been a better cook than I was. Because he went away and he got a goat. Got it killed. Got it dressed. No. I wouldn't even know how to get the thing killed, never mind dressed. And he made broth. And he made bread from an ephah of flour. Come on now, some of you people. You remember the prophecy of Zechariah? Zechariah got a vision of an ephah measure of flour. And an ephah measure was so big that a woman was able to sit in it. Must have been a fair size. They would say that would be negotiable too. Yeah. Actually, for the comfort of some of you ladies, I was reading recently that if you go to West Africa, the sign of a beautiful lady is a whose proportions are so such that when she climbs onto a camel, the legs of the camel break. So, for a Western world where thin is in, I think we should send some of our good ladies to West Africa for a few months, and it would greatly help in a number of things. But an ephah was roughly a size of our old bin. Not these blue bins, but the old bins. And he made bread out of a bin full of flour. I do not know. I would say at the best, brother, and it's only a guess, you can guess, but your guess is as good as mine in this type of thing. I would say it must have taken 3 or 4 hours. To get all that begging done, to get the kid killed, and to get the broth made, must have taken, if it had been me, I'd say the Lord about way hours ago. And Gideon got back. The Lord was just waiting. Oh, he says, I'm glad to get a present from him. He says, nobody, these boys haven't given me anything. Tell me this, when did you last give a present to God? When did you last cater to the delights of deity? When did you last make a pot of broth that thrilled the heart of God? When did you last bake a bin of flour and set it before the Lord on the Lord's Day morning? Fresh presents of worship. You know he's waiting for it. Waiting for it. There's places he has waited for weeks. You see, listen, what I have to do and abbreviate here and close in a minute or two is this. The man that threshed wheat was not only a worker, but he was a worshipper. And the man that was a worker in the private and a worshipper in the presence of the Lord became a warrior that took the children of Israel to fresh victory. I would love to God around here that we would get some dear brethren that would do the threshing privately, would be able to set a present before the Lord. The Lord touched it. The whole thing with the smoke. He says, Gideon, I haven't got the likes of this for years. The Lord's wanting people to worship him. Preachers are fine. Preachers are fine. But what the Lord really wants would be worshippers that would make the world of difference. It's no wonder that this man who threshed wheat in the winepress, the man of valor and the man of vision, became the man of victory in chapter number 7. But I have one sad thing to tell you. I hardly know whether to mention this or not, but I will, and it'll only take 2 minutes. After Gideon won the victory, and it was a big victory, it's referred to in the prophecy of Isaiah and so on, it's a marvelous thing. I can't go into his battle. I've said something about his busyness and his background and his basket and the battle. After he cleared away all the rubbish in his own father's house, the battle. But one wee problem that it seems to me that this great man, success went to his head. And when he was chasing after these Midianites to clean the whole project up, there were a couple of towns. One of them was called Succoth across the Jordan. They were Israelitish towns, like Succoth and Penuel, and they didn't join in with them. Now, they didn't do right. They didn't do right. They did not. They missed the boat. They missed an opportunity. They should have been in on it, but they weren't. They didn't join in. They said, no, you're not going. No, they wouldn't join in. So Gideon had to press on, and he, with the help of the Lord, won a great victory, and he thought it was great. And the man that started off so bashful, he became very bitter. And he was going back. He told him, says, I'll get you. I'll get you. He told him that. Not good talk for spiritual man. When he was coming back, he met a fella. He says, will you give me a list of the elders? Give me a list of the elders. The young fella hadn't the wit not to bother. He wrote out a list of the elders. Gideon got, he says, come in here, boy. He took thorns and briars, and he threshed them to death.
The man that started out thrashing wheat
finished up thrashing his brother. Then he went to the next town, and he not only killed the elders, he killed every man in it, and he knocked down the tower, and he left them both without a man and without any defense, stripped everything. You say, Gideon, what's happened to you? Gideon, keep thrashing the wheat and keep making the food and keep worshipping God. Whatever you do, don't shame. Can I say to us all, I was saying it in Lurgan on Lord's Day in a different connection, but as I close this meeting, dear brother, we make mistakes and we need faithful ministry and we need to be corrected and rebuked and searched. But remember, it's not your prerogative or mine to thresh the brother. Once I take the symbols of the curse, thorns and briars, left them in shreds, just ripped them to pieces, left them in shreds, bleeding to death, the man that cleared away the chaff finished up clearing away his own people. And I think it's a very sad end to what could have been, and was in fact, a brilliant story, but it could have finished that way. It's just a pity. We need to watch success and power, because as Lord Acton said, power corrupts, and absolute power, it corrupts. Absolutely. May God help us to keep working, so that we may not only glean in the field, but thresh in the wine press, for the good of God's people and the blessing of many. Shall we pray?